Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. The Hornets have just completed a 0-4 week. While their nemesis, the Timberwolves, completed a 3-1 week. Had to throw that in there for Mr. McNamara, who guessed that exactly right last week. And has ended with the Hornets sporting a Western Conference worst 3 wins. And only the Washington Wizards in the entire league has a worse record than them. I kind of want to say I told you so myself because of my horrible prediction at the beginning of the year, but it's not really that satisfying. Michael, did you see anything this week that gives you any hope that this will suddenly turn around magically? Or is this what we should have been expecting and can expect for the next rest of the season?
I know it might be a little bit of blasphemy, but I think this week has kind of been the best case scenario if I could draw up exactly what I would want as a Hornets fan.
Really? You think Timberwolves going 3-1 is the best possible thing?
Well, okay, but I told you that was a scheduling issue and just wait till we get to March. But I mean, purely from a Hornets perspective, if I were to draw up what I would have wanted to see this season, it would have been competitive games in which the Hornets were in every game with a chance to win down the stretch, even possibly have the lead. And then just find a way to lose by the most minimal of margins, because they don't have a closer. And that's exactly what's happened this week. But before we get into the Hornets, I was really hoping that sponsor for this show, just so either we could get some money to do some really cool stuff, or just get some free product. So I just wanted to go ahead and instead of looking for one, I just kind of wanted to spout out 3 things that I really like, and maybe they'll hear from us and decide to sponsor. So just real quick, and maybe this helps Hornets fans too. The Taco Bell Beefy Cheesy Crunch Burrito, actually really good for 99 cents, satisfying. NBA 2K12, 2K Sports does it again. If you're listening out there, NBA 2K people, go ahead and set up some free copies. And then Homefront Season 1 on Showtime, original series. I recommend everybody watch it. Homeland, it's something, but it's good. But if anybody has any connections or is listening, we're looking for a sponsor. So.
Right. The phone will be ringing off the hook any moment, I'm sure.
I had to try, but yeah, I guess.
And Game of Thrones is better.
You think so? I don't know.
Actually, I haven't seen Homefront, but I love Game of Thrones.
Yeah, well, one of those won the Golden Globe for best drama series. So, anyway, so I know it kind of sucks to say, and I'm not by any means rooting for the Hornets to lose, but I think if you were to honestly draw up a best case scenario for a rebuilding team, I mean, it's not like the Hornets are like the Wizards or some of these other bad teams that just absolutely get blown out on night. They're right there in every game, and they're being competitive while also racking up ping pong balls.
Yeah, so I mean, I should quantify that a little bit. They own the record of 3-13. They are the worst in the Western Conference right now, record wise. There's actually one team in the West that has a much worse point differential, which, if you've read the blog or listened to us before, that's the predictor of actual success and gives you the actual team quality. That, of course, is the wonderful Sacramento Kings, who are losing games, or they are outscored by their opponent by an average of 11 points a game.
Yeah.
Which means when they lose, they get their asses handed to them.
Yeah, they just go all in on the losing.
Because they've actually won 6 games, so holy crap.
Right.
That's a feat to lose by 11 points a game when you've won more almost half, well, 6-11 is a record.
Yeah, and I mean the difference in the Hornets and that Sacramento team, and I've been saying this, you know, in this shortened season, teams are simply winning at home and losing on the road, that is, except for the Hornets. The Hornets are 1-8 at home, but Sacramento just absolutely sucks on the road. But even the other bad teams are winning their home games, and the Hornets just can't seem to do that.
Yeah. Not sure what that is, but I'm sure it'll even out eventually, right?
It'll even out with health. But okay, so 3-13. But I'm going to ask a weird – I guess it's a weird question. It seems like an obvious answer, but do you think the way the Hornets have played this season – forget about their record for a second, though, just the way they've played, have they overachieved or underachieved? Based on what they have on their roster, injuries, yada, yada.
I think that they are playing above their talent level based on injuries.
I agree. Absolutely. Isn't that weird to say about a 3-13 team?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's been, what, 2 blowouts all season?
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. And they had one on their own side. So, I mean... It's pretty that I mean I would not have expected that from the way they play. I mean they're just I'm gonna say it. The games are so frickin' ugly. They're unpleasant to watch. But you know what shocks me? You go and look at like the efficiencies. The Hornets' defensive efficiency isn't all that great. I mean they're actually not a good defensive team. But I mean, I guess part of that might be just because they turn the ball over so much that they give away easy looks. I mean, I guess that's where I have to go with that. Because, honestly, in the half court, they dirty the game up unbelievably well. And they always give themselves a chance to win. I mean, that's why all those teams, the old Knicks and the old Heat, they used to always be able to, you know, squeeze games, make them really dirty, get right down to the wire, and then sometimes pull out games they shouldn't even have had a chance of winning. Even though they had a lot of talent, they still just – I mean, that's how they won their games. It's just get yourself to that point where everybody's just exhausted and then give yourself a little more. And the Hornets just don't have that little more right now.
And you got to give them a little bit of credit for that because one thing that surprised me, with the Hornets keeping scores low is every time I look up, it seems like the Hornets are 2 of 18 from the three-point line.
Yeah.
And if you have 16 misses off of threes – a lot of time those rebounds go long. That's when teams get out into transition and the break. And really the Hornets have been doing a decent job of getting back. I mean, I think of that Houston and those Dallas games. You know, I just remember teams getting out on the break off of ugly turnovers and getting easy points that the Hornets never seem to get. And yet, I mean, this week, yeah, they are 0-4, but they lost by a total of, quick math, 17 points. To Portland, Memphis, Houston, and Dallas.
Yeah.
3 out of those 4 will be in the playoffs, and it wouldn't shock me, especially if Houston could make a move with all of their pieces. All 4 of those teams are playoff teams. They, by no means is this an awful team, and I really think this is the best case scenario long term.
I mean, if you look at, I'm going to agree, if you look at what they're doing, you just look at their offensive numbers and they should lose all the time. I mean, they're shooting historically bad from three-point range. I mean, absurdly bad. None of the players on this team, except for, I think, Ariza, who shoots 3 points regularly, have a career three-point percentage lower than the team percentage right now. I mean, the team as a whole is shooting that badly, and they're not even – I mean, it's not like they're taking contested three-pointers. Most of the three-pointers they take, I'm not upset with.
Right.
And, I mean, their field goal percentage is 42%. They don't get a lot of free throws. I mean, this team should be getting its ass handed to them night in, night out, and it's not. It's freakish.
Yeah. Yeah. So you kind of brought up Ariza passing this week. That was, I guess, one of the big stories of the week, Ariza's return. What did you think of him overall in his comeback?
I thought he played very well.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, only one night was I kind of like wishing he would stop shooting a little bit. I mean, he is a major difference maker on the defensive end, and you can see it obviously when he's out there, how different their perimeter defense is, how disruptive he can be. So I'm all for having him play. The only problem, of course, is he's soaking up so many minutes that Aminu's not even going to get a chance to improve.
Now, do you think... See, I think this is where general managers and coaches, whatever, they get themselves into a bit of a bind, because if Dell just gives up on Ariza and trades him for trash, he essentially has to acknowledge that he just gave Darren Collison away. Do you think that plays into it all, into... I mean, do you think behind the scenes Dell and Monty are talking about Ariza as a long-term piece on this team, or would they be showcasing him in order to get some trade value?
You know, I don't think that showcasing Trevor Ariza is going to raise his value or diminish it. I mean, I think everybody pretty much knows what Ariza is at this point in his career. And I do think that the you know, admitting mistakes like that, and, you know, trading Collison for the opportunity to get rid of Posey, I mean, that is something that general managers will think about and that they will be careful, because, I mean, they do have to look to job security. And if you continuously have to admit, I made a mistake there, your tenure is going to be shorter. I don't know. I've been not a fan because of his offensive game for a while. I don't think that his return would be trash, but then I think that Emeka Okafor has a little bit more value than you do too as well. So what do you think that if they went out there and they gauged the market for Trevor Ariza, the response would be very bad?
I think best case scenario is you could trade him for an expiring contract and one of those second round picks that aren't really second round picks. But you know, there's some desperate teams out there making a last run. I really think a team like the Lakers would be interested in having him back if they could kind of trick themselves into thinking that they're still contenders. But you know, the Lakers don't really have even that expiring contract that they'd be able to trade for him, maybe a third team. But I don't know. I find it hard to believe that Monty is playing. I mean, Ariza this week, he came back, played three games, and he's averaging over 41 minutes a game in those three games. So is Monty trying to win? Is he trying to get this team a victory at all costs just to get their confidence going? It's just hard for me to believe that Ariza's part of this long-term plan, if it is really a 3-4-5 year rebuild. So I'm thinking if they're playing him that much, I mean, you see how cautious they are with Eric Gordon. And now Ariza comes back off an injury, and they're just throwing him out there to the Wolves. To me, it's either just to do anything to get a victory or showcasing him for some kind of trade.
All right. Which, I mean, I think, honestly, I think it's do anything to get a victory. I really think that Monty does, I don't think he gives a crap about the future necessarily. I really do think he's trying to win every game he plays, and he thinks that Ariza gives him far and away the best chance at the small forward position. And I don't disagree with that. Honestly, if I had to play that, pick from these small forwards and have a starter to win tonight's game, Ariza would be the one to play.
Okay, so when does that change for you? So, yeah, 3-13, we've seen teams start slowly, and I'm thinking this year to make the playoffs, you're going to have to win quick, let's say minimum of 35 games. So let's say based off of that, the Hornets would have to go 32 and, help me with the math, 18. So, okay, that's feasible. At what point does that stop, being at all costs to win this game and start looking to the future? Maybe not in our eyes, but if you had to project in Monty's eyes.
Well, I mean, I can't say what Monty's going to be thinking, 10 games from now when he's won another 2 and lost another 8. But at that point...
Optimist.
I mean, at that point, you pull the plug. You move. I mean, Demps just has to start sending veterans out for whatever he can get for them. And, tell Monty, start playing some of the young players. I'm trading this guy away and this guy away as soon as I can. And so start finding a replacement.
All right. So I guess let's go forward to that. What did you say? 2 weeks, a month, whatever?
Yeah, it's probably about 3 weeks. It's in 10 games with 3 weeks. They're averaging 3.5 a week right now. So, yeah.
All right. So let's go to that. Because, the rest of this month doesn't look very kind. We'll go into the schedule in a little bit, but we're going to be heavy underdogs in the next 5 games. And, schedule doesn't let up until early February. But so let's go to them. Let's say the Hornets are 4-20. You're Monty. What do your rotations look like?
All right. So we're doing rotations at 4-20 record. At that point, I mean, I think you have to start looking to the future. And I guess so. We'll play this roster game as if we have the exact same roster as now. Demps hasn't traded anybody away yet.
Yeah.
Okay. I would be starting Emeka Okafor, Gustavo Oyon, Trevor Ariza, Eric Gordon if he's back. Otherwise, Marco. Actually, no. Let me change that. I'd be starting Jarrett Jack, unless Eric Gordon is back, and Grievous Vasquez at the point guard.
Okay.
And first guy off the bench will be Marco.
Oof.
For guards. And at power forward center, my first guy off the bench would be Carl Landry and Jason Smith at center. And Farika Manu at small forward. So I have a three guard rotation, a off-mouse four big man rotation, and then two person running at small forward. DeJuan Summers is the odd man out. Trey Johnson is out. Xavier Henry, I'm not really even thinking about him right now because I have no idea if he's healthy or when he'll be healthy. Squeaky, I'm sorry. You can't play anymore. And you notice Kamen doesn't see a minute unless there's fouls.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, so your three-guard rotation is who?
It's a four-guard rotation if Eric Gordon's in it.
Well, yeah.
If Eric Gordon remains out for however long, it's Jack at shooting guard, Vasquez at point guard, and Bellinelli as their backups.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm hoping that Gordon will be back by then. But, to me, gosh. Yeah, I kind of broke it down by minutes, and I I just split the point guard duty between Vasquez and Jack at 24 minutes apiece. Give Jack some shooting guard minutes behind Gordon. Split the minutes up at small forward between Ariza and Aminu. And then I actually got a four-man rotation of Smith, Ion, Okafor, and Kamen, if only to showcase Kamen. But I guess the biggest thing to me is I really see absolutely no reason for Marco to see a minute.
Okay.
Marco has absolutely no trade value, no reason to showcase him, and I can't think of anybody I've been more disappointed.
You were picking him to have a little bit of a bump this year, weren't you?
I mean, and he's getting the shots. He's really getting the shots that if he would have shot the ball the way that he's supposed to, the way he's done in the past, I really think he could have had a nice little year so far. I mean, if he's, it's just so frustrating, but I don't see any point in playing him. I really think Kamen and Landry are going to be guys that are going to be pursued at the deadline. And I guess the biggest thing I've come to is I'm not necessarily ruling out Jarrett Jack and even to a smaller degree, Trevor Ariza as long-term pieces on this team. I mean, do you think that you could see those guys on this team in some kind of role as we kind of develop the new guys and rebuild this roster?
I think Jack, as you've watched him, if he's able to be in either as a shooting guard or as a backup point guard or just a limited minutes point guard, I think Jack as a leader, he's not bad. I mean, people murder him because of his playmaking. He's not, you know, Chris Paul.
Mm.
But he tries his damnedest every minute he's out there. He's always when he's on the bench, he's always jumping up and down, calling things out. I mean, he is a good role model for these guys. He's intelligent. He's a smart guy. I mean, you see breakdowns now in the defense because these guys are so unfamiliar with each other. But if you listen closely, the person you hear talking on the floor is Jarrett Jack. And he's always correcting people. When, like, something goes wrong, there's a breakdown, he's the one who walks over and tells someone, you should have been here, you should have been doing this. I've seen him on Aminu probably 6 or 7 times in the last couple weeks. So I think Jack, and I mean, I don't think he's particularly overpaid. I think he's a perfectly good veteran presence for a team that's starting over. Ariza, I mean, I can take him or leave him. I mean, I wouldn't. Ariza is one of those guys. I think an Ariza Gordon wing position is actually a pretty solid one.
Right.
I would prefer to have upgraded Ariza, but if I had to live with Ariza, I'm not going to be upset.
Yeah, but then again, to you, an upgrade wouldn't be Rudy Gay, the guy who just
no,
absolutely murdered the NBA this week. But okay.
Except for when Ariza was checking him.
Yeah.
Ariza made him look like a chump.
Oh, and and Ariza did an amazing job on Kevin Martin. I mean, to the point where as I'm watching that game in the second half, I'm getting mad at Monty.
For not playing him in the first
half. Like, then yeah. Even and there was one play in the fourth quarter that was a big shot by Kevin Martin on that one play. Marco was on him. But yeah, I think in the right roles, man, I mean, wouldn't it be so nice to know, not just think, but actually know that Gordon and Ariza would be good next to each other? It's
yeah, it would be nice to see him play a little bit.
And then, so that kind of brings us to another situation. This week's kind of been a weird week for Eric Gordon news. I don't know if you saw the interview they did with him. During the game, I thought was very interesting because he was completely forthright. I mean, he didn't beat around the bush, came right out and said that the team didn't have any guys who could create their own shots, and that they basically have to outwork other teams, which, you know, was nice to hear. but also talked about his willingness to stay in New Orleans, look for a contract extension. Monty made a weird comment that this week that optimists are taking one way and pessimists are taking the other way. He said that there's basically saying that he has some news on Eric Gordon that he can't report yet. The optimists are thinking that's a contract extension. Pessimists are thinking that the knee is worse off. But either way, we know that the Hornets would love to lock up Eric Gordon and that Gordon is at least willing to stay. Now, I want to give you some contracts, and then I want you to give me a figure on what you would offer Gordon. So this week, Russell Westbrook just signed his extension. 5 years, $80 million, essentially getting the max. About on the other side of the spectrum, we look at another young shooting guard, another young scoring guard, whatever you want to call it, that got a deal this offseason. Now, the reports on this deal have varied, but let's go with the conservative one of Marcus Thornton, 4 years, $33 million. Jason Richardson got 4 years, $25 million this offseason. And just to throw a couple of other guards out there on different levels, Wesley Matthews has 4 years, $26 million on his contract. Iguodala, 3 years, $44 million. Monte Ellis, 3 years, $33 million. So looking at kind of where the market is for guys a little above him, a little below him, however you see it, what is your offer as Eric Gordon walks into your office right now?
And it's a 4 years total, right? That's a new extension
rule. You can do four or five.
I can do five?
Yeah, so the maximum is 4 years, 61, or 5 years, 80. Those are the max.
I'd be offering him a four-year, $50 million deal.
So 12 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that, yeah, that puts him a little above Monty Ellis.
With the expectation I'd probably end up having to increase it slightly as they negotiate with me.
Okay.
But, I mean, I'm not talking like another $5 million. I'm talking like two, three. Maybe throw him in a nice little $10 million bump if he makes MVP.
Yeah, I'd be willing to pay that. Well, yeah, it's just, it's interesting to consider because the deadline is this upcoming Wednesday for the Hornets to extend him. Mm-hmm. They could continue negotiating with him throughout the season, but they wouldn't be able to actually sign him to a deal until the off season. And it's interesting. I know people probably find it curious that these guys don't get extended more often, but if you really think about it, you know, the Hornets have all the leverage in this situation where, so if they go ahead and they give him that 4 years, $50 million that you're talking about,
you're bidding against yourself.
Not only that, but, you know, next year they have an opportunity to just extend him a qualifying offer of $5.1 million. So essentially what they're doing is adding an extra $7 million to their books, you know, immediately for next offseason before, you know, before being able to do some more creative things. I mean, if you look at what the Clippers did, for instance, they didn't sign DeAndre Jordan to his new deal until after they made some other moves. And this is something that you could do with Gordon, let's say, if Dell wanted to be aggressive in free agency, is extend him that qualifying offer so only it's 5.1 on the books, then, you know, go out and sign close to up to the cap and then still match, you know, a big offer for Gordon or even throw one your own way at him. So it's just, it's a situation where I think people might panic just based on the Hornets history. If Eric mm-hmm. Gordon isn't signed to an extension by January 25th, but really it just, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense unless Dell could get a discount versus what he thinks he might be able to get this upcoming summer or next.
So you haven't actually said anything. Do you think that's a reasonable offer I made? Is that what you would make?
I think I think I would do five. I would like to do five and actually have the numbers decrease a la David West, mm-hmm. just because of, right. like I said, with, you know, with the Lux. So yeah, if we're looking at 12.5 million, I'll go 13. So 5 years, 65, with it actually starting out higher and decreasing as the years go along. I think Gordon wants that, yeah, some security, and I wouldn't mind it either. So just lock him up to the full 5 years.
You're not worried about his knee at all?
No, and see, that's what I think is going on. I think if I had to put two and two together, I think they have the framework of a contract extension in place, and now they're doing these tests the same way that you would do for a guy that you just traded for. All right, we're about to give you this big contract. We're about to make this commitment. Let's do these tests on your knees just to make sure. But I saw him bump knees with Grant Hill. Unless it was mm-hmm. something there before that only because of this collision, you know, are the doctors now seeing. I just can't imagine that it's something serious. So my feeling is that's what they're doing these tests for, is to basically do one last full check on that knee before both sides give us okay to the contract extension. And honestly, I mean, this season, if the season plays out like this with these close losses, ownership coming in and Gordon extended for a couple of years, I can't think of a better scenario, for the long term than those three things going down.
Okay. So, I'm going to go back to something because you escaped. You squirmed out of it and started talking about other stuff before I had a chance to challenge you on
the Taco Bell Cheesy Crunch Burrito? All right, let's talk about
it. No.
Oh, okay.
Now, I'm a Taco Supreme kind of guy. They're much better. So, power forward, Carl Landry. So, there is not a more talked about guy in our comments about Carl Landry should have played more. Why isn't Carl Landry getting more minutes? And then you gave us your rotation just a little while ago, and Landry wasn't in it. It was Kamen, Okafor, Ayone, and Smith. So what are you doing with Landry? Are you just benching him? Just letting him sit
yeah,
there?
Yeah, and I'm getting him,
and
I'm
don't
getting
care.
Him frustrated, so whoever I trade him to, he'll accept it. Because he's a good player, and I know people love the dunks, and they mm-hmm. think yelling equals passion and hard work.
He's explosive.
Yeah. He doesn't make anybody on the team better, ever. Hmm. He doesn't do anything on offense or defense to improve the games of his teammates. He doesn't make an extra pass. He doesn't, you know, play good help defense. There's just absolutely nothing that he does to make the team as a whole better or his teammates better. So there's just really no reason for him to be on this team. I'm still slightly curious as to why they signed him, unless it was to be a trade chip, or it's quite possible that they didn't know, you know, that Jason Smith would have made a slight leap, an improvement, or they would have been able to land Ion, and or he would have been able to play this quick. But there's absolutely no reason for Landry to be on this team, and if they could get any decent assets for him, he needs to move and he needs to accept whatever.
So, yeah, I mean, I want to address one thing about Landry. I had him in my rotation just because I want Kamen gone before Landry. So I put in Kamen at the bottom of it. But Landry, just take a – next time a game is on, watch him in the few minutes he'll get on defense. If he ever steps away from his guy at all when someone's driving into the paint, other than to swipe at them with one hand, that's all he ever does. And that's not what he was last year. I remember watching those Lakers playoff games when he was – doing his damnedest, dude was rotating all over the place. And at the beginning of this year, he was rotating out to shooters. He was working really hard. He's already checked out on defense. He's not trying.
Yeah.
And Monty said something about the people who are playing or those who are working hard. And it was in response to, why is Landry not playing? I don't know why people are thinking, well, it can't be Landry who's not being the one who's trying hard. I mean, Landry is not working hard defensively. So I have him in my rotation, but, you know, I don't necessarily disagree. I just I don't want Kamen gone a little bit quicker because I think his offense hurts
us.
Yeah,
and it's
if we want to call it offense.
It's especially, I mean, you could see it with Landry, especially when the other two guys getting minutes are among the most, you know, the hardest working, most passionate, give everything for the team type of guys in Smith and Aeon.
Yeah, those guys are all. I love our second.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're not going to win anyway, why not play those guys? You know, the guys who have that attitude that are buying into what you're selling and putting team first.
I mean, if I had to just go, you know, just on this team, just what I like to watch, I would put out Vasquez, Jack, Ariza, Smith, and Ion. Those guys are always doing their damnedest.
And see, there was a stretch. I want to say it was during the Memphis game, but there was a stretch of about 2 minutes where Aminu was affecting everything on the court on both sides. Remember, he had a steal, he had a block, he ran in transition.
He's the only hard one for me to leave out of that group.
Yeah, but to me, he's a complete confidence player. And I just, you know, with Ariza coming back and with this game that Monty's playing with, you know, Summers getting the backup minutes some nights, Aminu other nights, I understand he's trying to keep guys motivated and pick and choose his spots, but I don't know. To me, you do that with fringe guys who could be a part of your future or not. Aminu is a guy that honestly for this team to seriously be a quality team in the future, he's going to be a guy that you have to develop into at least a rich man's Trevor Ariza. You're just not going to get that many shots at top 10 picks. I mean, I think we'll have one this year, two if we're lucky. And, you know, you would think with Eric Gordon back and with as good of a job that Monty does of taking, you know, a bad team and making them competitive, you're not going to get many shots at having guys who have top 10, you know, potential. I think Aminu has to be developed at almost at all costs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would be splitting time between Ariza and Aminu. I mean, I don't know I don't know Ariza's demeanor though. He may be one of the kind of people who would check out on you if you did that to him. I mean,
yeah, but so
is that a danger to you? I mean, if you do that, you've lost Ariza for the future. Do you worry about that, or is Ariza again? You don't care?
No, I mean, to me, yeah, no, to me, I mean, realistically, if you think about it, what do they always say that the teams? You look at Oklahoma City, and they have to go through trials and tribulations and their tough losses in the playoffs. And maybe they'll break through in Durant's fifth, sixth, seventh year, whatever, but it's going to take that long just based on that. If the Hornets are in a rebuilding process, you're not talking championship contender till minimum 3, 4, 5 years down the road. And I mean, Ariza's not on the team at that point. And at that point, Aminu's just entering his prime. So I just think you have to develop him at all costs, and if you got to showcase Ariza now in order to get something for him in the trade or at least not have to take another contract back, you do what you got to do.
So the only other thing I really wanted to talk about rotation-wise, I think people need to lay the fuck off of Jarrett Jack.
Ooh!
Because,
F-bomb on a PG-13.
Yeah, I mean, Jack is getting murdered, and yeah, he turns the ball over too much, and sometimes he takes dumb shots. Yeah, but holy crap, this dude is doing everything he can out there. He's actually scoring at one of his most efficient rates. He's probably the best offensive player we have. I mean, If I'm picking anyone on this team to blame for the reasons why we're losing, Jack is like one of the last ones.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the people who are like putting in the comments about how much they hate Jarrett Jack and how he's a loser and he needs to go to the bench, you got to really reevaluate how you watch basketball.
Right. Like, I want to see, as much as I want Vasquez, I want to see what Vasquez's numbers would be if he was getting 38 minutes a game. Because I would bet he'd be around 6-7 turnovers a game.
Yeah.
And it would just be hard to watch. No, Jarrett Jack's completely surprised me. I mean, I'll be the first to admit, in our preseason podcast, I said I thought he was overpaid. Because, you know, $5.6 million isn't backup money. And I didn't think he was a starter. But now I do think he's a legitimate starter in this league. And again, just as the case in the past, I honestly think he's the perfect guy next to Eric Gordon. Well, not the perfect guy. If I could have any player next to Eric Gordon, of course I'd pick an elite point guard. But I mean, as far as somebody, you know, reasonable salary and obviously, you know, somebody that could be gotten because he's already here. But I just think he's a good match for Gordon, and I think that a lot of his errors have come in the last 2 minutes of games, and quite frankly, he's made the wrong plays in both the Houston and the Dallas game down the stretch. But Jarrett Jack doesn't have the ball down the stretch for a halfway decent team.
Right.
So, I mean, he's single-handedly got us back into a couple of games, the Memphis game in particular.
And he kept us going in the Houston.
Right. And then, you know, at that point, he would just hand it over to somebody else. But, I would definitely take Jarrett Jack over a handful of starting point guards. And, again, I really think he'd be a good match as a backcourt mate for Eric Gordon, where they both handle the ball, both play off of it at different times. So.
All right.
All right, there. Yeah, I guess readers, please back off of Jarrett Jack because I was a little scared of Ryan there.
That's right. Come down on you. So, I don't know. I was looking at this team, and I was trying to figure out who would I try to be trading right now. I think we kind of touched on this a little bit right at the beginning with when you're talking about, you know, Jack and Ariza sticking on board. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming you think Landry should be walking out the door as quickly as possible too.
Yes.
I'm kind of wanting to know which center would you rather have on this team? And I'm talking reality. I'm not talking like some mystical salary number. What they're having right now, including what Kamen might be paid next year, would you rather have Kamen or Okafor remain on this team?
Okay, so, well, here's my question about Okafor. As we've seen time and time again, whether the coach is Jeff Bauer or Monty Williams, it seems like if they have any other possible option to go to at the end of games, Darius Sengala, Chris Kamen, you know, those guys, that Houston game, Mech was on the court for 17 seconds over the final 11 minutes, the final six of regulation and the five in overtime. Is there some, I mean, he puts up decent numbers. He obviously had put up good numbers in the Dallas game. But there's got to be something that coaches don't like or don't trust, or, I mean, there's an issue there where he's just a liability. I don't know if I want the center on my team who I've got to hide in the final 5 minutes.
You don't think you'd have to hide Kamen, or is it just because his salary is expiring? And you can let him go away anyway.
I just think I could do...
Would you rather have no center than Kamen and Okafor on the team?
I just think I could do more things with Kamen. If I had to guess why Monty kept Kamen in, I think Kamen stretches the defense. I mean, there is no offense that I've ever seen that's easier to guard than the Hornets offense. There's no spacing whatsoever. you know, and there's just no threat on the court. If I had to guess, I think Monty had Kamen out there to be able to space a little bit. I think with Okafor, people just cheat so much, and he doesn't have the athleticism to get up the way that the Tyson Chandler used to when, you know, people just leave him. We can't really throw the alley-oop to him, and if you throw a pass in his chest or a bounce pass by the basket, he's not going to be able to go up strong enough to finish. I just think he's such a liability on offense, particularly at the end of games. He makes the, you know, the court so much smaller for his other four teammates. I can't have him as a long-term piece. So at least with Kamen, I know that he can provide some kind of threat, or at least the illusion of a threat. So I would honestly go with Kamen.
Okay. Strong statement.
I mean, you disagree. Can you make any case for Okafor on the offensive end, or are you just saying you'd bite the bullet and take the defensive presence and build your offense through the other four guys? I mean, what's your case for Okafor?
I think Okafor has to go. So I mean, I would actually rather have no center than either of our two choices at the current moment. I'd rather have play Ayon or Jason Smith at center.
Well, speaking of, there was a juicy little rumor floating around the interwebs. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what you think about this, because to me, this has multiple interesting aspects to it. But as you've said for a long time, the Minnesota Timberwolves are a team that are looking for a center. The Hornets have the Timberwolves pick. Let's say Minnesota called you up and said, I want Okafor. You could take expiring contracts, or you could take Darko, who has 2 years, including this one, and an expiring contract. Just give me Okafor so I could plug my center position. Would you do it, not do it, be worried at all about that making their pick better, worse, etc.?
So all I'm getting back is Darko a crap.
You could get back. I mean, Anthony, you could. Okay, so best trade I could give you is Brad Miller's expiring and Anthony Randolph. Or, you know, something like Milicic and Anthony Randolph, whatever. But, you're not getting greatness back, but you're dumping Okafor, but you are plugging their center position, and we have their pick, obviously.
Wow, that's a hard one.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Their pick is already slated to be in the middle of the round anyways. So do I really – I mean, say that right now
– It wouldn't be the middle of the round. It would be like 12.
So, 15 is the middle. Isn't that the same thing? 12, 15?
No.
Not much. All right. 12. So let's put it this way. If we hand them Okafor – for Randolph and Milicic.
Right.
Essentially, we're probably making that 12th pick. What, 16th pick? 17th pick?
I think they're making the playoffs then.
Yeah. Oh, I already think they're making the playoffs.
Have you looked at this league?
Yeah.
They're beating the teams that they should beat. I'm telling you, their schedule is going to get a lot harder.
Okay. It's fine. I'll just take that. So 12, with Okafor, do you think they make the playoffs? Because Milicic is awful. Man is useless.
But, okay. But you're... See,
and I don't care if I'm bringing back useless, because he's only for 2 years, which is better than Okafor and his, you know, forever contract.
Yeah, but again, to me, that means that you've got to incorporate a new body into a system, Okafor.
No, you let Darko walk. You make him bottom of your rotation. You don't play that guy a minute.
Well, no, I'm talking about Minnesota with Okafor. Yeah,
okay.
On paper, Okafor is a better player than Milicic, but...
On paper? Have you seen Milicic?
But what I'm saying, if you let me finish, is that he has to learn a new offense, he has to fit in. I mean, you don't just put puzzle pieces together and they automatically fit. I don't know. I don't think they're a playoff team either way. I think maybe you're looking at the difference between 9th, 10th pick versus 11th, 12th. But I don't know. I think it's an interesting scenario, but you might take it.
I would
wouldn't it?
Yeah. I would.
Yeah?
At this point, I would. Okafor is not part of the future. And the quicker we get out of it and the quicker we make certain we're tanking, the better.
Yeah, I would love Darko and Gustavo.
If they throw a second round pick at us, it's sold, because those things are worth a lot, man.
Second round pick.
Then I turn around and I call Boston. I say, I'll give you Kamen for a first round pick, so I can pick like 22nd, 20th, and then I'm ready.
All right, that's gonna be an interesting trade season, I guess, but we got to get there first. We still got to get through almost 2 months of watching basketball and try not to look too far into the future. So just to look into the immediate future this week. Ugh.
Yeah.
No.
Not good.
Got four games, actually have five over the next 7 days, but we'll just go with these four. We got San Antonio at home. He's actually been a horrible road team, so we'll see. At Oklahoma City, who beat the Hornets by 10 in New Orleans just about 12 days ago. Home against Orlando in the only game that those two play this year, and then home again against Atlanta. Any of those games stand out to you?
Any of them stand out to me?
For any reason. I don't know. Maybe the cheerleaders? I don't know.
You know, people keep talking about trades to Atlanta, so maybe I'll address the Atlanta one, because we've already seen Oklahoma City, and Orlando, I don't want to talk about how we're trading Emeka Okafor for Dwight Howard, because that's stupid. So Atlanta, they've been surprisingly good this year, even with their star center, I guess you call him star, he was an all-star, Al Horford out after tearing his pectoral muscle, which is the strangest injury it's not strange, but have you ever heard of that as a basketball injury?
It's happened twice this year. And
I know, him right, and Kwame Brown, and I had never even heard of it in happening.
Yeah,
in
and
basketball.
Before that, it rarely happened, and basically a lot of people are attributing it to the lockout, because basically those are usually strength, weightlifting injuries, and yeah, it's just something that these guys are just on completely different schedules now with this compressed. But anyway, go ahead.
So, I want to talk about that because this team's always been, people always like the idea of trying to pry Josh Smith away from them. I want to say we're not making any trades with Atlanta. There isn't, if I was Atlanta, I would rather run with Zaza Pachulia as my starting center than try to pick up a Emeka Okafor. The team is playing really well. Jeff Teague, although he's not anything to write home as like an incredible point guard, is turning into a good, decent point guard. His assist to turnover ratio is 2.5, which is exactly where you want it. He doesn't get a lot of assists, but then that's because Joe Johnson has the ball in his hands all the time, or Josh Smith has the ball in his hands all the time. So I expect Teague will probably roll in against the Hornets and will turn Jack and just make him look terrible, because Teague is all explosion and Jack's defense is not good against quick point guards. And then, of course, your boy, I just had to bring him up, your boy, Tracy McGrady, playing backup small forward for 20 minutes a game, is playing extremely well. He's shooting really well. He's shooting 48% and a rather stupid 71% from three, which that's not going to continue. But, he's putting up a 17.2 PER from the small forward position for 20 minutes a game. You're absolutely right. If the Hornets kept Chris Paul and they brought in Tracy McGrady, that would have been a wonderful choice.
Oh, too late now. Atlanta is an interesting team, and they've actually played fairly well since Horford went down. They took an interesting strategy this offseason and basically let they let one of their premier scorers go, and they just looked around the league for, you know, these veterans who you have gone on record as saying, you know, it's just stupid when we get these guys who are washed up and much rather.
Willie Green, Vladimir Romanovich, Gennaro Pargo, Jerry Stackhouse. I mean, come on.
And Pargo's
shooting the best he ever has in his career at 40%.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to last, but it's interesting what they did, because I think most people are just expecting the Hawks to blow it up and try to unload Joe Johnson. Not like anybody would take what I consider the worst contract in the NBA, but that's an interesting team that I think, again, will be one and done in the East, but I think a lot of people expected them to fold when Horford went down. They're actually playing a little better.
I'm disappointed we didn't trade Chris Paul to them from Marvin Williams. You're moving up in the draft, man, from fourth to second.
Oh.
So prediction, Atlanta, they're going to torch us. Anyone surprised by that? No, I don't think so. So what team would you want to talk about?
Okay, I'm interested in the Magic just because I always knew that the guy had one unique skill set, but this year it's just been absolutely ridiculous what Ryan Anderson's doing. The guy's averaging 17.5 points per game.
I've wanted
him
for years.
And only 5 of those points every game come from 2-point range. He's averaging 12.5 points between 3-pointers and free throws. And this isn't exactly the most physical guy who gets to the line, whatever. But, I mean, it's absolutely insane that teams, I don't know if they haven't done a scouting report. You have absolutely nothing to worry about when it comes to this guy putting the ball on the floor. And, I mean, imagine Peja at his absolute worst with his back when he was just spotting up, but not even possessing that skill set. There's just absolutely nothing to be afraid of with Ryan Anderson outside of his 3-point shot, and teams still haven't figured this out, and it's just dumbfounding to me that this guy, every time I look up, he's 7-for-11 from three. I mean, he's averaging 8 3-pointers a game. Do people not do scouting report? I don't get it.
Pages never took more than 5.5, I think it was. Maybe it was 6. But, I mean, he's 8 a game. His PER is a frickin' 25.
Right, and I don't get it. I mean, so look at Game 7 of the Hornets' magical season. The Spurs just didn't leave Peja. They just kept – okay,
right.
So why isn't the scouting report for Ryan Anderson every game? Oh, who's covering Ryan Anderson this game? This guy. Okay, it doesn't matter what else is going on the court. You just stay in it, you know, your head in his chest. Okay, coach, I don't get it. I don't understand how guys like this thrive, and it's just going to drive me nuts or make me happy, depending on if I'm rooting for a win or a loss, to just watch Ryan Anderson stroke 7 or 8 threes against us when there's really nothing else to guard.
Right. I mean, that whole team is just – it's 3-pointers cast away, and they're back. I mean, essentially, you know, Rashard Lewis, his last few good seasons in Orlando were the same thing. What offensive threat did Rashard Lewis bring to the table?
He had a small post-up game, and he could put the ball.
Yeah, but it wasn't much of anything.
Yeah, but I mean, it was leaps and bounds above Ryan Anderson. But no, I know what you're saying.
They just stretched the floor. I mean, their top players, minutes-wise, Anderson, Turkoglu, Redick, Richardson. And I guess Jameer Nelson as well. I mean, Richardson, who has a great, much better career average than this, is shooting 34%. He's their worst. By the way, he'd make the best 3-point shooter on our team right now. But, I mean, they have Ryan Anderson at 42%, Hedo Turkoglu at 48%. That's not staying, but wow, crap. J.J. Redick at 40%, essentially. I mean, who do you leave? I mean, your choice is cover Dwight Howard one-on-one.
I don't know about that. I mean, you should be able to get back to the weak side, even if you rotate guys over. I don't know. I just know that the guy's shooting 8 three-pointers a game. And that's absolutely – and it's not like all those guys are on the court at the same time, because if Redick, Turkoglu, Anderson are on the court at the same time, my team should be scoring 130 points a game as well. So it really doesn't matter who I leave.
So here's the thing with the Hornets, though. You watch them, and it is very clear that their defense is 100% dedicated to collapsing right. in the paint. If there's a drive, even guys from the weak side will jump in to help all the time, leaving excellent shooters. I mean, Kevin Martin broke free so many times, it was crazy. So what happens when you go up against Orlando, whose offense is predicated around the idea that, yeah, they collapse, we drill it from three-point range, and they can do that. Are we going to get completely torched, or are the Hornets going to be intelligent about their defense and shift it?
I will say that the only bright spot is that will be Orlando's fourth game in 5 nights.
So maybe
second
their legs will be
dead. Back-to-back, and just a couple of nights ago, they played San Antonio in the third game of their back-to-back-to-back, and I'll say that is the ugliest game I've ever watched in my life. So possibly tired legs will aid the Hornets in this one, because yeah, the magic should be a little exhausted in their fourth game in 5 nights, all in different cities. They go to Boston, to Indiana, then home, then at New Orleans. So they should have a bunch of travel. They should be tired. They'll have just played a game on national television the night before. I don't know. I'm actually thinking that's one that they could steal, surprisingly.
So, and I just have one last little stat I wanted to throw at you. I want to get your opinion on this. So New Orleans baits the other team into taking, at this point, the fifth most three-pointers. Their opponents take the fifth most three-pointers per game in the league. But they have the third best three-point defense in the league. Is that by design or is that by luck?
Okay.
Are the Hornets good at baiting you and then defending it, or just shots aren't going down because people are tired because the Hornets have been dragging them all game and dirtying it up?
Honestly, I have no way of proving this, but I think it's a focus issue. I know you're not as big of a football fan as I am, but you had to have heard about Tebow mania. But teams, you know, Denver's defense looked really good there for a couple of weeks. And my theory was that the other team's offense just didn't feel like they had to score, because Denver's offense was so bad that there wasn't that focus or that need to feel like we have to score 31 points, whatever. I think it's the same thing with the Hornets, to be honest. I really just...
People are just jacking from three and not getting there.
Really, I really think, you know, in a true story that I'm somewhat ashamed of but somewhat proud of, when I was 24 years old, I was in a regional final for Madden, where I was a Madden gamer, and I'm that guy. I brought my own controller. And in the finals, I played a 12-year-old kid in the finals of this regional tournament. $25 and pizza was on the line to the winner, so I was focused. But I let the kid get up 14-0 on me. I never really worried. And then I went down and I beat him 24-21, and he was able to tell everybody how he almost beat the really cool, good-looking 25-year-old. And everybody went home happy that day. And I can't imagine that teams play the Hornets. You know, Dallas comes in, the Hornets are 3-12, they're starting there's not an above average player on their roster that's playing. I just can't imagine they come in with the same focus as if they went to OKC that night.
Oh, come on. You know they're in there saying, we got to stop Kamen.
Yeah, I don't know. I think.
Do you think they even game plan for them at this point? They're just kind of like, on offense, they'll throw the ball to a guy and he'll jack up a stupid shot or dribble it off.
I think they spend more time scouting restaurants in New Orleans than the actual team, if I were to be honest.
Oh, we're killing these guys.
And they're good guys. They're trying hard. If you yeah. add three guys to the top of that roster, this is a very good team. If you add Eric Gordon,
we keep Eric Gordon. We trade Squeaky for Chris Paul, and I don't know Kamen. We'll give up something good. Kamen for Dwight Howard, and we're
random
rolling.
Thought of the day. You know, a team would be really good with Chris Paul is the team that beat the Timberwolves last night, the Utah Jazz. By far the most surprising team this year. Everybody's talking about Philadelphia.
Yeah, but Harris isn't so bad.
They were keeping him off the court at crunch time yesterday. He was absolutely awful. In Dallas, he went 0-7. That guy's a disaster. They can't wait to get rid of him. But, he's absolutely awful. So if and when that team...
He's got 11 PER.
Oh, he's been beyond awful this year.
I watched one game of theirs, and he wasn't. I mean, he wasn't great, but he wasn't that bad. But holy crap, he's stinking
it up. Yeah,
he probably
knew you were watching, but no, those supporting pieces on that team are quality. They move the ball. They're really well coached. But
I love Millsap, by the way.
Yeah.
I always have.
Yeah, it's a surprising little team there that I actually think is doing a disservice to themselves in the Ryan Schwan rules, because I think that team, if they would have got one more elite lottery pick, they would have stunk this year. Or I think they get New Jersey's pick next year, which could be the pick that if New Jersey loses Deron Williams and doesn't get Dwight Howard, obviously, that could be another great pick. But I actually think Utah's playing a little too well for their own good. But just random thought.
Speaking of picks, by the way, I wanted to point out that if the Hornets had completed the Lakers trade, their draft pick that they're going to receive in this upcoming draft will probably be better than the one that Timberwolves are giving us, because they were getting the Knicks pick.
I will bet you any amount of money that the Timberwolves pick will not be better. You're such a prisoner of the moment. Jeez, just wait a little while. The Timberwolves had a really easy schedule. They had who? Detroit and some other crap team at home. They went to the Clippers without Chris Paul. They had a really easy schedule.
Have you seen how bad the Knicks are? Do you think Baron Davis is going to save them?
No.
They are Amari Stoudemire? I think he's just pissed off that he's not the focus of that team anymore. Carmelo's supplanted him. Because, I mean, that was his problem in Phoenix, was he wasn't the man. He goes to New York, where he's the man, and they trade for Carmelo, who's now the man. And he's just, fuck you guys, I got bad knees.
Two F-bombs, we're going to have to make this an R-rated podcast.
New York is terrible. Anthony is a ball hog like you wouldn't believe this year. I mean, Tyson Chandler actually did come in and improve that defense, but his forwards are a wreck, and unless they move one of them for somebody good, that team's going
nowhere.
Yeah,
and the Miami Heat started 9-9 last year, and they couldn't fit together. It'll work. You get guys who could. It'll work.
All right, let's do a wager then. Let's do a wager. We'll have to come up with something that the other person will have to do when they lose. I say that the Timberwolves will have a better record than the Knicks by the end of the season.
I'll agree to that, but I still say that's not fair. Because I'm talking about the pick. Your premise was the pick, and I think the Knicks could have a worse record and still make the 7th or 8th spot in the East, while the Timberwolves, you know, don't make the Western playoffs. But I'll actually take both bets, because I've seen the March schedule that I told you to post on your mirror. The Timberwolves will beat teams at home that they should beat, but they're not going to be going into, I mean, their division. They're going to finish last in their division. They're not going into Portland and OKC and Denver and winning those games when they've got to go and play those teams 9, 10, 11 times this year. So,
all right. Well, we'll see what happens. So, everybody, if you guys can think of something you want, you know, Mr. McNamara to do, that'll be very embarrassing for him when he loses this bet. Feel free to let us know. Send us a tweet. Send us an email. Post it in the comments. It'll be interesting to watch him abase himself.
I'm going to make you a custom breast cancer awareness Hornets jersey. Just an all pink one.
Okay.
And that's what you're going to have to wear to your next Dungeons & Dragons fest.
Right.
All right. So,
because no one in those, you know, places are ever, you know, they never embarrass themselves socially. they're all really cool.
The weirdo of the cool kids. All right, so four games. I mean, okay, instead of predicting the record, because that's just depressing at this, at this
too
point,
easy.
Why don't you rank the games from most winnable to least winnable?
All right, most winnable, I think, San Antonio. Least winnable is Oklahoma City, because it's in OKC. And I would say Orlando is a little less winnable than Atlanta. So I guess in order, that is, San Antonio will be the one you should definitely watch if you're hoping for a win. Then Atlanta, then Orlando, then OKC.
Yeah, I actually think Orlando is the most winnable just because of the schedule. I could honestly see them resting somebody if that's the fourth game in five nights.
And because you can't understand Ryan Anderson. By the way, I'd rather have Ryan Anderson than Rudy
Gay. Okay. The Hornets played Orlando well at home, even though Aaron Gray's not walking through that door. I'll say Orlando's the most winnable, then San Antonio, then Atlanta, and then, of course, that at OKC game is just going to be tough, and if that doesn't depress those hoping for a win, that fifth game in 7 days is at Miami to round out the month of January. So a 3-18 record through the first, the first part of the season is not
third, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah. So
we're on pace right now to only win 15 games.
And that's why we bring you that draft prospects column every Saturday on Hornets 24/7.
Right. So I guess we're done. Thanks, everybody, to listening to In the Know. Have a good evening, night, morning, whatever it is where you are listening to this.
Watch podcast. Homeland, only on Showtime. Party town, ain't nothing but a party.